Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we're running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings and feedback and all that nonsense about every single episode. So right now, we are up to episode 12 of season 2. It's called The Royale. This one was directed by Cliff Bohl, written by Tracy Torme under his pen name of Keith Mills. It aired back on March 27, 1989. This is the one where Riker, Data, and Worf become trapped in a strange hotel on a planet otherwise incapable of supporting human life. Clay's here to talk about that one, so right after this break, we're going to get to it.
This is the story of a group of compulsive gamblers caught up in a web of crime, corruption, and deceit. It is told by nefarious Lothario, Mickey D., who appears only at the climax of the story to carry out the cold-blooded murder of the hotel bellboy. There is also a subplot about an older man conspiring with a younger woman to murder her husband. She is squandering her inheritance.
Captain, this novel and everything Data just described seems to be exactly what's happening at this hotel.
Hey, we're back. How's everyone doing? Hope you enjoyed that little clip. So what does everyone think of The Royale? Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just waiting to cash in and buy myself a hotel.
Yeah, it's only $12.5 million, right?
Space hotel.
Space bucks. But, yeah, this is the Royale, otherwise known to France as the Quarter Pounder, right? And, this is, just to sort of bury the lead, if I'm using that expression correctly.
This is my favorite James Bond movie.
Yeah.
I think Daniel Craig was a revelation.
Yep.
In the lead role. And, it's just great that they're going back to the books.
You know? Yeah. They don't stick with Baccarat or whatever they play in the Bond movies. They went a new direction here where they just play craps.
Right. And they spend as much time explaining how the game works in this as they do in Casino Royale.
Yes. Craps is the one game I don't understand at casinos. I wish I did because everyone seems to be having a great fucking time playing craps. So
yeah, anytime you see anything in fiction or commercials,
yep,
it's always at the craps table and people are loving it.
Everyone is winning money when this motherfucker is rolling sevens.
Even if they're not, it's just like, I really want to watch somebody throw some dice down a deep well.
It's exciting. So, to start this off, I got some feedback from our friend Jim, and he wanted a little bit of a plot recap, so I'm going to do that. I know people have complained about that before. I'll try to do this quickly. So the Enterprise gets word from a Klingon vessel that, hey, there's some weird shit going on this planet. They go over there. They find a hunk of debris that they beam aboard, and there's an American flag with NASA on it. So this hasn't been around in a couple hundred years.
52 stars.
52 stars, yeah, which pins it between... Riker knows off the top of his head where it came from. They get beamed down. They find on this inhospitable planet that's covered in, like, methane freezing tornado storms, they find one little building that they can beam down and exist on. Riker, Worf, and Data go down there. They go inside and it's like a Vegas casino in there. Mm-hmm. They walk around, they examine this place. The Enterprise is up above trying to figure out what's going on. Riker, Data, and Worf meet all these weird people. They eventually find a corpse of a guy who was on the original ship that they found in the start of the episode. And he has been living in this, casino thing that was created by aliens for his benefit, based on a book that he had on board. So Riker, Data, and Worf have to go around exploiting this situation of living in a world that's a book. They gamble a lot. They win a lot of money. They buy the hotel, and then they are finally allowed to leave, which they hadn't been able to do before that. They get beamed up, and that's the end of the episode.
How does it end?
A bad love affair ends in a bloody shootout. The hotel gets bought out, and life goes on, such as it is.
I feel very conflicted about this one. I love this episode. I have such a fun time watching this one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's objectively bad either. People seem to be really torn about this one.
I wouldn't say it's objectively bad. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
My biggest issue with it is I think the second half of it is kind of boring.
Oh, really?
Well, it... It contains my favorite plot device in anything, which is the magic book.
Yeah.
Which is the book that you find that has all of the answers in it for whatever the problem is that you're dealing with. And, like, it's at that point that I feel like it kind of takes a nosedive in this episode.
Oh, that's, yeah, sorry.
Because the book, well, what they find in the room with the corpse in it is they find a copy of this novel, The Royale, and they also find a diary written by the astronaut who's died. Yeah. And Riker reads the diary, one diary entry that's in the book.
He's only made one diary entry.
He reads it out loud for the benefit of everybody watching the show, where they explain exactly what's happening, why it's happening. But unlike the, it includes the knowledge that, the hotel has been created as a construct by these aliens based on this book, and it's for the benefit of this human.
Yeah.
But then the human basically says, this book is so bad, I pray for death.
I really think that's the genius of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
The show acknowledging, I guess what's funny about this one is that this is a holodeck episode, but done really well, where it doesn't come along with all the baggage of what makes holodeck episodes so frustrating. And you're like, why can't you just fucking fix it?
Yeah.
Like, they're in a holodeck situation. That is very similar to other holodeck situations that they've had. But in this one, they're free to admit that this is stupid because the book that it's based on is stupid and everyone in the show acknowledges that it's stupid. And I think it's funny that you said the second half was dull because my biggest gripe with this one is in the first half, until they figure out what's going on, the crew on the Enterprise has nothing to do.
True.
And there's a lot of scenes where they're just like, can we get them yet? And they go, no. And Picard goes, okay, let me know. And then he walks off.
Yeah.
They do that like three times.
Well, just to finish my thought about the book thing, I think it turns there, to a point where I'm kind of bored with it because they don't learn anything about how to succeed at what they're doing. They don't learn how to get out from the book.
Yes,
usually your magic book plot device, holds the answers to defeating whatever you're up against, or it gives you like incorrect information and you have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
They don't actually know what the button they need to push is to get out of this thing.
No.
And
no,
the book doesn't know, because clearly if the guy knew, he wouldn't be there still.
Let's see.
Although I guess there's really no way he would have gotten out of there even if he could, but.
No, I mean, that's kind of like to start off fresh. So it's like, which is a big problem. They never sort of figure out how to get out of the book. Like they don't do that. They sort of realize it as they're getting to that point. They're like, oh, if we win a lot of money, we can buy the hotel and that's the end of the book.
And like, why does that work? Like what?
This is the genius of the episode though. You've admitted that this makes no sense.
Okay. All right.
Like, so if this was a regular holodeck episode, I'd agree. I'd be like, why the fuck would that fix anything?
Yeah.
But they're coming from a source novel that's stupid and it doesn't make any sense. And so doing whatever the book says is what causes you to win in the end.
The thing I did actually like about it, and, I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this episode. Yeah. I think it's a lot of fun.
No, I need you to talk me down of why. I'm probably overphrasing it, but I have such fun when I watch this one.
Well, the thing that I actually really liked about it is it's sort of a bit ahead of its time in that basically what Riker, Worf, and Data are doing is playing a video game. Because the way that they interact with people inside that casino, they can only interact with the certain, there's AI activating all the people, but they can't talk to everybody.
Right.
There's only specific players that they can interact with.
Everyone
and get
else
information
ignores
from.
Them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you would in a video game. If you just, you know, the people that are, if you're playing a video game that takes place in a casino.
Yep. Only certain people have information that you need.
Right. Most of the time you could go up to everybody else who's playing craps or whatever, and they would just be doing the same motion over and over again. And
they'll
you can't actually.
The one line answer. It's like, I'm winning a lot today. And you hit to talk to them again. And they say, I'm winning a lot today.
Right. Exactly.
I'm winning a lot today.
And, you know, and basically they have to figure out the puzzle of the room to get out of the room. And I think once they get out, there's no, indication that that place is now gone, right?
It's, no, it still exists.
So, like, if they wanted to, they could go back in and do the same thing over again.
Well, that was my... I'd imagine that... Yes, they could, because I'd imagine that the astronaut who was in there was reliving the situation over and over. Like, the story was just repeating ad nauseum, and that's probably why he went so insane, because...
Yeah.
And, I mean, for him being stuck in there, I think, is clever, too. It's not as clever as the fact that it doesn't have to make sense because you've established that it's stupid. But the fact that Data goes down and is able to win the gambling makes a lot of sense plot-wise. Because he can rig the dice to actually cause them to win.
Well, he actually fixes the dice, doesn't
he? Fixes,
he?
But he's able to roll perfect sevens all the time. Yeah, so that's why he's able to get out of it.
Right.
But I just thought that was really... clever. The one weird thing is that they're lucky that they managed to beam down exactly how the book described them as three foreign investors.
Oh, yeah.
It's lucky only three of them went, which is a nice, nice turn.
I thought that, I agree with what you said before about how, there's nothing for the Enterprise to do in this episode. Even towards the end, there's nothing.
Although the after they learn about the book, every Picard scene where he's like, I have to fucking deal with
that
this.
Stuff is great.
It's so fantastic.
Where he's basically listening to the book on tape and like groaning the entire time. Which, again, is the stuff that I'm noticing now that I love is just the way that he reacts to all this like menial shit.
Just the first scene where he's like, computer, give me the book, Hotel Royale by Todd Matthews is a perfect author name for this kind of book too. And him and Troy are standing there. He's like, well, let's get to the bottom of this. It was a dark and stormy night. Well, maybe it gets better.
Yeah. Which I find interesting because that opening has been maligned as an opening phrase since it was written.
Yeah.
I looked it up a little bit. It's from a book called Paul Clifford that was published, which is a great title for a book.
Yeah.
Which was published in 1830.
Oh,
and,
really?
Huh. Yeah, that far back. And like, as soon as, I listened to another podcast called the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
Yep.
And they covered a story. I don't know if it was this one, but they covered a story that referenced this. And I think if either that story was referencing it in a mocking way, and this story was written in like the early 1900s.
Yep.
Or they mentioned a bunch of other stories and other writers who have mentioned that opening is just the worst opening
thing.
Ever.
Yeah.
So it's funny that persists to the 24th century.
Because the sort of parody is the throw Mama from the train. Billy Crystal's working on his opening. He's like, the night was damp or something. The night was moist, and you can't figure out like how to describe it. Yeah, it's just such a famously stupid line. And it's just every Picard is just looking more and more bored as the whole thing is going on.
Well, see, the thing that was weird to me was I had watched this episode a couple weeks ago while I was working. And, you know, I just kind of have it on and it just kind of wash over me.
Yep.
But this time I was actually really paying attention to it. And it sets up like it should be a Picard episode. Because he gives that thing at the beginning about Fermat's last theorem.
Oh, yeah, the theorem.
Is that a real thing?
It is. And it was... A little bit of trivia. It was solved in 1995.
Really?
So a couple years after this aired, they finally got an answer to it. But that is a real theorem.
Was the answer 7?
I couldn't even comprehend. It was funny that the theorem sounds so simple. It's it's like a one sentence. Like if n does not equal 1 and something else happens, it's like, wow, that's difficult. But yeah, I guess it's a real thing.
But so it sets up with him dropping in. The reference to that thing and, you know, talking about how much he loves puzzles and everything. And it's like, I understand its reference to the overall plot of the episode.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they're in this puzzle and they have to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But they've already established Picard as someone who loves that shit.
Yes.
And so to have him not involved and then to have him just be bored on the ship seems like a misstep. On the other hand, I don't know why they would sending Picard down there doesn't make any sense.
No.
But I feel like there should have been more on his end, like more excitement or more anxiousness to solve the puzzle on his end.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's weird because as much as I love the comedy, you would have seen him as the one who was reading the book to try to figure out the best way.
Right.
And instead, he just seems like... He's basically just got like his head in his hands as he's sitting on the bridge, just going like, Riker, you have to be flamboyantly generous. Like, this is what the book says, so you have to do it.
It was a dark and stormy night. It's not a promising beginning.
Make it better.
I agree with that. I think it's funny because that theorem to me just felt like a way to get to the end of the episode when you're like, how the hell did they even get out here?
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, some things we're never going to know.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just kind of the answer as to why these astronauts that were only supposed to go outside the solar system somehow ended up in the middle of nowhere that
right.
no one can figure out how they actually got there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Picard doesn't have anything to do. I so enjoy his reactions to the stupid book as they're going on.
But it's funny, the whole thing actually kind of reminded me of a Next Generation version of an original series plot.
Yeah.
The Next Generation version being, there's people back on the ship who are trying to solve the problem as well, or
yep.
just kind of sitting around.
Yeah.
Because, like, the first thing I thought of after I saw the episode was, I think it's the original pilot of the original series,
mm-hmm.
where, Pike goes down to this planet where these aliens have created this, ideal living situation for humans.
Cause yep.
it's like, you know, it's like it's called the Menagerie, I think.
Yeah.
And it seemed very similar to that. Like, they had this human there and they wanted, for reasons we don't know, and they, wanted to make it comfortable. So they tried to make something that was what they thought human society was.
Yep.
But they based it off of a shitty novel.
Yep.
yeah. And it's that whole conceit felt very original series. Also, the idea that, like, in the original series, I feel like every other episode they're encountering some sort of omnipotent space god.
Yes.
That never is mentioned ever again.
No.
And they don't know where they came from.
And it was also a big problem in the first season of this show.
It was
like
it really?
every third episode was like, I'm a space god, and
yeah.
I don't understand what humans do, so I'll kill you unless you
yeah.
prove something. It's like, I don't care.
I like this one because they do that without, you don't ever see the thing, or they don't ever really reference it.
The aliens
it.
Seem to be gone.
Yeah.
They seem to have just built this thing just to, as like an apology for killing the crew.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're just like, oh, here's your, like, we'll build you an Eden, and you can
yeah.
just live there, and they don't understand. Which, I guess I'll go into a little bit of the backstory of this one.
Please.
So this one is written by Tracy Torme, who's been a staff writer for the show for the first 2 years.
Mel Torme's sister.
Mel Torme's son.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh,
actually
sorry,
Mel
Tracy.
Torme's son.
Oh.
Who wrote for SNL
really?
For a while. And all of his shows that he's written so far have this sort of weird tone of comedy. They're not particularly funny, but they're trying more than any of the other shows to be funny.
Yeah. Did he write for SNL in that Dead Zone era, like from
yes,
80
the weird
80 80s. To 85?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we've established he's not funny.
We've established so SNL does not rehire him, and he comes to Star Trek instead. This was the episode where he resigned his role as staff writer and took on a role of creative consultant. He only has one other credit after this one. It's also under another pseudonym.
Have we done any, have I been present for any of his other episodes?
Did you watch Haven?
No. I don't think so.
No, Haven, Conspiracy was his with the alien parasites.
Nope.
You probably haven't seen any of his
okay.
stuff then. Yeah, or we haven't talked about it on the podcast. Haven is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
None of his episodes are particularly great.
Is Haven, is that a Troy episode?
Yeah, it's where
she gets married.
Yes, her mother, mother's first appearance.
Ugh.
Which also has weird comedy. But he wrote this one.
I'm going to write one diary entry about that episode.
And shoot myself and do that's it.
Pray for sweet death.
Tracy Torme wrote this episode. Maurice Hurley, who was the showrunner at the time, rewrote it really heavily,
mm-hmm.
apparently. And Tracy Torme was upset by this and resigned his role. He only has the one credit after this.
Interesting.
And he gave up on the show at that point.
Mm.
A lot of writers have been upset about Hurley and Roddenberry rewriting all their stuff. It's like a recurring theme in the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Mostly because the writing staff was so in turmoil and Gene Roddenberry was still trying to impart his opinions about how the show should be run, which will all change for the better in season three. But in the meantime, he wrote this show and it got heavily changed. And reading, you know, the feedback is that from his bias side is that everyone was saying that his original script was better.
Mm.
And they're upset with the way this came out. His original script does not seem that interesting to me.
Okay.
There's Hurley's reason for rewriting was what he was saying. He said it was too similar to the original series story where this happened. And he didn't want that to continue. He said it was too surreal. And he didn't like the satire that was in it.
Mm.
I don't know what the satire was. But his original idea was that...
the rewriters being like, this is kind of stupid, isn't it?
This is ridiculous. Torme's original script, I guess, had seven of the astronauts had survived and were living in the world that was the head guy's favorite memory from his life.
Okay.
And all of them had died, except for... And this is where it gets hazy. Either he is still alive when the Enterprise shows up, or he's dead... And the aliens are using him like a puppet, and they bring the Enterprise crew on to amuse him. And the Enterprise crew solves it by leaving a dead crew member behind who will entertain the other dead crew member. And
what?
That's my understanding of how the story works.
That's some weird, twisted shit.
Which is extremely dark for a Star Trek episode. And I think this one works much better. Like, this is more, certainly more Star Trek, and it's more enjoyable to sort of think about. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, that original synopsis doesn't seem like it makes a ton of sense. I do really enjoy the idea that they've kind of found this weird video game tomb,
mm-hmm.
and like, there's nothing involved with the creation or the purpose is there.
Right. Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. It's a, I also think they do a real, it's a difficult job, but I think they nail the tone here because it's funny, but it's also a little bit creepy, especially when they find the body. It's like, this is unsettling a little bit, at least. Like, it's like, they do good things of like the music shifts. When they first show up, it's very carnival, like a Vegas casino, and they find the body and everything. The music becomes much creepier and it's much darker about, and because that's when you realize everyone there is just like an automaton that can't really do anything. They're just pulling the levers on the gambling machine and they can't figure out how to get out. But
you know what my problem, I just figured out what my problem with this episode is.
Sure.
There's no, urgency to anything.
No.
There's no
immediate threat.
Yeah. Picard literally says, don't worry. If we have to stay here for months, we'll figure out a way to get you back. And it's like, all right, well, okay. But there's no like,
the impetus to get out is remarkable because it's like, Pulaski's like, well, we can shoot a hole in the thing and you'll freeze and we can beam you out and maybe resurrect you. And Riker's like, is that the best you have? Like, yeah. He's like, well, I'll try to get
first out. First draft.
we're just spitballing up here, guys.
If there had been something, I think this solves both problems for me where it could activate Picard to be more involved where like if, and also make the episode a little bit more, engaging if this thing that clearly has been up and running forever, but nobody gives it, you know, there's nobody there anymore.
Right.
Creator or user, if it was starting to break down or something and like whatever was holding that gas away was starting to crack and
true.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like they have to, so like you start getting in video game terms, you start getting more glitches in the system.
Yeah.
And you know, something to make it a little bit more than just,
we got to get out of here.
Yeah. Eventually. Well, it's like we should get out of here eventually, really. Yeah. And it's also more like, isn't it funny how weird these people from Texas are? Even though I'm convinced that guy was Riker's spirit animal. Cause when he shows up, Riker like gives that look. He's like, yeah.
Amy was laughing at that too. She goes, Riker likes that guy.
I'm going to roll with this guy.
The Texan. For the guest stars, the Texan, I guess, is a Walker Texas Ranger person. He's been in a bunch of shows. The desk clerk.
That guy I've seen in like a ton of stuff.
The desk clerk?
Yeah.
Yes. I remember him most just because we'd finished watching a whole bunch of the episodes. He's in the Friends episode where Phoebe gives birth and he plays her doctor who is obsessed with Fonzie from Happy Days. So that's what I recognize him from. And unfortunately, I don't recognize Mickey D. I don't know who that actor was that played him.
Dressed like...
to the nines.
Some sort of horrible 1980s meets the pulp era nightmare with his nice gray shirt with the triangle pattern all over it.
The coat just draped over his shoulders.
Shoulder pads for the shoulder pads.
It certainly was a terrible book. If that's like, yeah. They were saying the book was told through the perspective of Mickey D, who only appears at the end.
Yeah. No. You know, I caught that, but it didn't occur to me how stupid that is.
So how does Mickey D know anything that's going on? Only to come in and shoot the bellboy over some bizarre reason. But,
over some girl we never see. So,
yes. Oh, yeah. She never appears.
Yeah.
I think I give the show a lot of credit for you've discovered a plot thing where you can make a bad plot and just be like, this is our out.
Yeah.
Like, the source material is stupid.
Yeah.
We don't have to try, which makes it funny in a weird way. But it's, I think, you know, the show's writing is getting better. Like, the right crew went down for this. You know, Data is the answer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Riker has a sort of balanced approach to everything. And Worf's reactions to everything are hysterical.
Oh, yeah. No matter what you're doing in an episode, having Worf do something, like, from the modern era human is gold every time. Like, the way he answers the room service phone, it works every time.
Wait, the look on his face when Data's gambling, he's just like, I need to get the fuck out of here. And he also did a nice bit of business when they're in the room, he can't figure out how to open the closets. For a little bit. He's like in the back.
Oh, right.
It's when he says, what a terrible way to die, when they're like, you died in his sleep.
That's a good line.
He's,
I like
he's
that,
fiddling around in the back, but yeah, they don't need room service. I just, I think it's not a great episode, but I think it's fun at least.
Yeah.
You know, and at these early episodes, like I can't consider that a great one, but I'm at least like, well, I thoroughly enjoyed everything that sort of happened there.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I agree. It's just, man, the stuff on the ship is so, like, it's boring, but it's also clearly boring for them.
Yes.
We get another great example of Troy proving her usefulness, where Picard's like, so, what's going on down there? And she kind of goes, Riker's fine. He's fine.
He's fine. It's funny you say that, though, because I thought that was the first time she's ever done something that only she would know.
That's true.
Because they've established that her and Riker have a connection in the pilot. They have that. And it wasn't just, you know, if it was another episode, you would have heard, like, Riker of the communicator being like, fuck, being attacked by something. And then it would have cut off and she would have gone, Captain, he's being stressed right now. Like, he's very stressful.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But they actually don't know what he's doing because they can't talk to him. And she's like, oh, he's fine. He's kind of amused by the whole thing.
The stakes are just so low.
They are low.
And like, in the whole episode, because even at that point, when she is like, Captain, Commander Riker is now feeling very tense and trapped in.
Yep.
It's not like,
there's no clock. There's no counter.
Like, and it's not, in at that point, Picard is starting to get involved, but even then it's like, well, I guess I gotta listen to this book on tape. And then, I mean, we could try accidentally freezing you by blowing up the Worth, but I mean, that's just rough draft.
It's just it. We need to get Pulaski in here for a line, who I am shocked. I think I write about this more than I say it, but I think the writers realize their mistake. People are starting to disagree with me about my Pulaski opinion, but I think the writers have realized their mistake with her because she has not been involved in any of these episodes outside of like her episode and the first one she was in.
Mm-hmm.
She comes in for a line and is like, yeah, I'll freeze you and thaw you out. And they go,
now, I don't know if you've mentioned it before. What is your take on her? You mentioned it a little bit on one of the ones we were talking about, but
my summary of the Pulaski thing would be, I don't have a problem with the character.
Mm-hmm.
The actress they cast to play her is not right for the role.
Mm-hmm.
The flaw with the character is that she does not make sense in the universe and the tone that the show has set up for what these characters are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone on the Enterprise is teamwork makes the dream work, you know, and they don't, there's no character that is deliberately a pain in the ass.
Right.
And even if she's not a bad character, mm-hmm. you know, you put her on a different show, you put her on Deep Space Nine, she might actually work better.
Mm-hmm.
But she is obtuse and difficult amongst a crew that you're like, can you just fucking do your job? Like, I don't care, like, about your sassy attitude.
Right.
Just do it. And it's unfortunate. it's unfortunate that there are no strong female characters on the show.
Mm.
But I think that's just luck of the draw of what genders went to what roles.
Okay.
Because the roles that they use and the roles that make sense, like first officer, captain, security.
Yeah, it's a shame they don't have like a female security officer.
They didn't nail that down.
I feel like it's a missed opportunity, honestly.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they never had a statuesque blonde. But if she hadn't left, I think what you were saying, like if Yar had been around in the second season, they would have done something with her because they've started to realize the importance of actually having a security officer who can do security type things.
Right.
And that's really my main issue with the Pulaski.
Yeah, I actually had not been introduced to Pulaski until I went back and I watched my way through most of the episodes, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
The thing that I didn't like about her was that they had Crusher, who, while she wasn't lighting the world on fire, she was her own character.
Yeah.
And then they replaced her with basically the female version of Bones.
Yes.
And I felt that was kind of like a step back. Because clearly, I don't know who made that decision, but it felt like, oh, well, what if we just write the Doctor more like the Doctor from the original show? Because it's if you picture DeForest Kelly saying basically all of her lines,
yeah,
it would make sense.
Yeah. No, it's the problem is that his tone in the original show makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's much more rough and tumble.
Yeah.
And you get the idea that Starfleet is really sort of not particularly sort of well, like you're more on your own mm-hmm. in the original series. Like the ship is its own little entity.
Yeah.
And in this one, the Starfleet comes across as like an established bureaucracy that like everyone sort of does their thing and it's a very clean cut about what
And also in the original series, Bones was the other side of Kirk's conscience, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
Where, you know, he was the empathy to where Spock is the logical.
Yeah.
And so his fire makes sense.
Yeah.
When he's talking about, you know, X, Y, and Z and arguing with Spock, putting that character in the Next Generation as a side character who's only shows up for a couple episodes at a time.
Every once in a while.
Just comes off as an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that being said, I don't mind her. I think she's fine. I prefer Crusher, but I don't know if that's just my own nostalgia or not. But.
Yeah, it's tough because they bring up the point like she sort of gives it back to Picard a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Crusher does it too, but Crusher does it in a way that fits the Next Generation. It's much more of a debate rather than an argument between
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Symbiosis, which is the first season episode, Crusher is the McCoy role where it's like. It basically sums up as like, if you had a situation where, you needed to kill one person to save two,
mm-hmm.
Spock would say you kill the one person to save two. That's mm-hmm. logical. McCoy would say you shouldn't kill anyone. We need to figure out a way to save everybody.
Right.
And they kind of had Crusher do that in the Symbiosis role, but it was a toned down debate about the merits of that,
mm-hmm.
where Pulaski comes in and is much more fiery and much more, well, we're going to do it this way. And it's like, I wish the show, this is not what this show is about. It's about, that's another show.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
And it's, so we talked about, Pulaski for 10 minutes in an episode where she's in for 10 seconds, if that, when she gives a terrible idea again. But that seems to be her way.
And why was that? No, I guess that wasn't her idea. She was just there to like as the consultant of the.
Well, it was Geordi's idea to shoot a phaser and cut a hole in the shield.
You know who should have been there? Chief O'Brien, because he would have given you a good answer instead of let's just maybe kill them.
He was there for a little bit. He had his pointless line where he's like, "Give me a second, gentlemen. I'm trying to do this. Okay, I'm ready now."
Yeah.
So it's like I don't know what the point of that line is. But he's been in like every single second season episode so far.
Yeah.
He's making his mark.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And just excited to see where he goes.
Commander, these cubes are improperly balanced. I believe their final resting position would be.
Can you repair them?
I believe so. I will make another attempt. Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
11 and a boy. Give it a few more times, we're all gonna get well.
7 winner.
And another one. Keep going, boy. We got them hot now. Let's go. Let's go.
Double them up. Here we go.
Keep it rolling, boy. Keep it rolling. 7 winner.
But that's it. Yeah, the Royale. I enjoy this episode quite a bit. It's one I always remember. It's probably going to be one of my favorites of season 2. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Not a classic, but I could show this to a non-Star Trek fan. I think they'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, like I said, I enjoy it as well. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it needs some other bit of urgency to get them out of there. I mean, yep. You know, it's tough because I know that when you get into Star Trek, the argument is always that, well, I know that the problem with a lot of the writers had is that they wanted to write characters that had conflicts with each other.
Yep.
But Roddenberry was like, no, these characters do not have conflict.
Yep.
And that is a problem because you can't write a drama without you can't write a story without conflict.
Certainly not character driven.
Right.
You have to rely on these weird sci-fi plot episodes that a lot of the time don't make sense.
Right. And I'm not saying I wish this episode had some sort of, you know, alien force that was threatening to blow them up or something, you know, really kind of hacky.
Yeah.
But it just has that kind of like mid-level stroll to it where there's nothing really hanging in the balance. It's not really a problem because it's still enjoyable to watch.
Well, I think that's true. I think if this was an earlier episode, it probably would have been bad, but we're hitting a point where they now know how to make at least the journey enjoyable enough where you're like, I wish something else was going on, but this is okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're getting a lot out of the character interactions in the casino. And the later stuff with Picard is really good.
Yeah.
I actually do really like the bit when they're listening to the thing and Troy's like, I'm just going to go. Is that all right? And he's like, whatever.
Did humans really talk like this? Yeah. No. You have to remember this is a second-rate novel.
What's actually another interesting thing is I was, before I turned it on, before I watched it, I was explaining it to my girlfriend, and I said, they go down to a casino it's based on like a hacky 30s pulp novel.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I just assumed it was like a noir book from the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize until I watched it closely this time that it's like a modern thing. It's like 80s modern, basically.
Yeah. I think of it as almost like a cheesy romance.
Yeah.
Because if it was noir, it would have been too close to Dixon Hill, which they've already done.
Well, that's the other thing. That might have been the other reason why I was thinking it should have been more of a Picard episode, because like he loves this shit.
Yeah,
you know, it's a puzzle, and it takes place in a trashy pulp novel. That's what his favorite thing.
That's true. I'm glad they didn't do that, just because they've done those episodes.
Yeah.
To take it in, it's sort of a trashy 80s modern story about a pulp. Like,
yeah, it's like an episode of Dynasty or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, and I enjoy it for what it is. A weird tone, balances nicely between creepy and just sort of funny at certain points.
Yeah.
Worf's excellent in it. I think Data slightly overplays his gambling persona a little bit.
Yeah, he goes from what is this? What are these weird things I'm holding? To
rolling
let
dice.
It ride,
rolling dice. Like, woo! He's been in Vegas for his entire life. Yeah,
and like he doesn't. I don't know. It's stupid details, but I mean, like if he had really like examined the way people were acting or something, but you know, that's just
notice what was going
on. Like he did in the comedy episode where he's watching what's going on and then he's running it through his processors.
Well, it's kind of funny that I mean, if you wanted to strengthen the plot a little bit, I think the Texas guy doesn't really add anything.
No,
he doesn't. They mention him in the book as if he's going to be important,
yeah.
And he doesn't come across.
Although he does have a really interesting plan of bankrupting that girl so she'll sleep at his house.
Yes, which is every male.
Which is dream. You want to talk about the long game? That's pretty long game right there.
Well, but he's giving her terrible blackjack advice.
Yeah.
He's telling her to hit on a 13 when the dealer's showing like 7, I think. So it's like, oh, well, this is no good. It's But it's really just sort of padding, and it gives Data a chance to do something,
yeah.
Which is not particularly strong. And I think Data overplays it, or Brent Spiner overplays it a little bit.
Probably a little bit.
You
know what actually would have been great is if it hadn't been Data and it had been Worf.
Yes.
Who just really got into gambling and was like really into craps.
Because you'd figure the Klingons would love to gamble, right? That seems kind of like a thing they would do.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That's why it's his disdain at the gambling seems a little bit strange.
Or if they're walking around and they keep losing track of Worf and he's always over at like the blackjack table.
he's trying to fix the turbo lift that he calls it in this episode that he can't figure out what's wrong with it. I like that a little bit. Let's go check out these turbo lifts.
Yeah.
He also can't push through the wall, which I don't understand why he moved the thing.
Yeah, for some reason I thought it was supposed to be a door. But that was weird.
Absolutely not.
It's actually very darkly shot too. It was coming up very grainy.
Oh, was it? Right? Yeah.
I don't know if you've talked about this before, but on the HD transfers that we've been watching, have they redone the effects?
Yes,
they have. They look fantastic. I think the ship looks great
in the second season.
Yeah.
Oh, Have you watched the first season?
I've watched what we've watched, but
if you go watch the ship shots in the first season and watch the second season, the first season blows them out of the water.
Really?
And the second season, it's funny, when they were remastering them, they CBS was doing it originally in-house. Mm-hmm. They realized it was too much work for their crew to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they sold off the work to, or they subcontracted it out for all of the even seasons, so every other season.
Okay.
And the second season is reviled amongst the HD sort of like Trek fans because the ship effects look noticeably worse.
Really?
Than they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't notice.
It pops, but if you go back and you watch the first one, the ship actually has shadows that are being cast on it.
Okay.
And every time the ship appears in the second season, it's very bright. It's as if light is hitting it from all angles. And in the first season, it's cool because it's the lighting. They paid a lot of attention to the lighting from the planet would show up on the ship like that. But I mean, I think that when they use the phaser, it looks a lot better in the HD versions and all that stuff like that. And space stations and stuff, like when things are obviously not models or whatever they're using.
Right. I guess maybe I was just comparing it in my head to the original series stuff, Blu-ray stuff.
Oh, that.
Because I'm not a fan.
I watched the one you told me about. What was the weird effect? The Galileo.
Oh, seven, yeah.
Galileo 7.
Yeah, it's a very effects-heavy episode with lots of, like, energy stuff and what the hell?
Shuttlecraft stuff. Yeah. I don't think I watched it, too, and I've never seen the original. Mm-hmm. One, I don't think.
I haven't either. It just stood out to me that it was like, they could have taken another pass at this stuff.
I thought they might have added scenes that were not at all in the original.
Oh,
because
really?
There was one scene where they're like going through the shuttle bay and the shuttlecraft is like turning.
Mm.
And I was like, that doesn't look at all like it belongs. I don't know if that was just a half-assed attempt at like, we'll put a shot. Like in the original series, they might have just gone, let's go to the shuttle bay.
Oh, yeah.
And then they cut to them on the shuttlecraft. You don't have to actually see the thing going on out there, which might have been happening. But, yeah, check the first season. First season's really good. The second season looks much better than it does on Netflix and all that stuff. Yeah. But
that might be why I've noticed it, because I've been going back and forth between Netflix and Amazon.
And they used a different film stock, I think, in season two. It looks much grainier. It's a much darker looking show in season two.
That's interesting, because usually it's the other way around with shows.
Yeah, they fix it in season three. Yeah. Season three starts to look the modern look that you'd expect.
I wish to cash in, sir.
I'm afraid you've broken the bank.
Just take $12.5 million, the purchase price of this hotel, and spread the rest around.
You're the foreign investors.
That's right. We just bought this place, lock, stock, and barrel. Consider it a done deal.
hell out of you fellas. You got style. Let me buy you guys a drink.
Just enjoy the game. Don't let them change the dice on
you. You got it.
But yeah, that's it, Royale. 4 out of 5 for me. I enjoy this episode. Personal favorite. I'm going to be very conflicted when I have to come up with my season 2 wrap up. And I'm like, I enjoyed that episode more than probably any others. Although I like Matter of Honor a lot too. We'll get to it when we get to it. Any final thoughts for you?
No. I mean, you know, I enjoy it. It's pretty good. I would probably put it like, I'd probably give it a 3.
Yeah, 3.
A season 2, 3. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
Because it's miles better than most of season 1.
Yep.
But it's still not, it still hasn't hit the high point.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they're getting better. They're getting a lot better at, this plus the last one I was on, Matter of Honor. Yeah. They're getting a lot better at getting drama out of nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just like there's no Matter of Honor. There's not really a huge conflict,
right?
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
a small event that turns into a bigger thing.
Yeah. Right, and here they're like I was saying, there's no urgency to anything, but it's not a bad episode,
right? Yeah,
you know, it's not just like hanging around checking your watch until you figure, oh wait, if we buy, I wish they had come up with that idea like more off the cuff. And it was like, what if we buy the hotel? if we buy the hotel,
it's Picard. What's nice is that in the future, the sort of Kindle function of finding a chapter you're looking for is much quicker because Picard is able to immediately pull up whatever section he's like.
Oh, right.
Oh, it says on page 392, foreign investors come in and say,
what would be awesome is if like once or twice down the line, they cut to Picard in like his quarters or something reading that book. That would be a great callback.
He starts quoting lines from it, like while he's doing diplomacy and seriously.
It's like Mickey D says.
Like Mickey D said in the Royale. Oh my God. Well, 4 out of 5. Clay would probably give it a 3 out of 5. But thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube. Like, comments, appreciated. We're also on iTunes. So if you want a iTunes hot pod for your ear hole or whatever, you can go there.
What?
Leave a rating or review. And, you know, it's all appreciated. All very helpful. Helps the show get up in the rankings and all that stuff. But thank you guys for listening. And I'll be back with whatever episode comes after this. I think it's Times Squared. Yes, I think it is. That's the one where Picard has a double.
Ooh, played by Tom Hardy?
He should be. He's cloned for... If I remember anything about Times Squared, Picard has a clone from...
This is my ship now.
...the near future, and our Picard hates him for no particular reason. That's what I vaguely remember about this episode.
Okay.
So, I'll get to that next...
Mustache? Goatee?
No, just him. I think the future Picard is scared. I remember him being scared.
Okay.
I'll have to see. But anyway, thank you guys for listening, and Clay, do you have anything to plug?
Well, you and I do a podcast on the 1960s British sci-fi classic The Prisoner called Back in the Village, The Prisoner Podcast, which you can find over at backinthevillage.com or on iTunes, or you can follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast. And I also do a webcomic called Dead Meat, which is as opposed to these episodes of Star Trek that have no explosions and gunfire, there's plenty of that in my comic. So if you'd like to check that out, you can find that at eatdeadmeat.com.
Cool. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you in a couple days.